Hi, everyone. Dan Cassidy here. Welcome back to the Viewpoints Podcast on the UBS Market Moves Podcast channel with my colleague, Burkhard Varnholt. Burkhard, welcome back. Happy New Year to you. I hope you enjoy the holidays, your break, and I, of course, look forward to starting to discuss what's moving markets with you again as we've now entered 2026. Now, Burkhard, I know that your weekly UBS Viewpoints letter this week carries exactly the same as you used in January last, and even the previous year. It's called Let Good Times Roll, 12 Reasons to Stay Bullish. So to get us started today, Burkhard, can you tell us a bit about this? What makes you so confident that the bulls will take it away again this year?
Sure, and thanks for having me as always, Dan. It's a great pleasure to be here. And yes, absolutely, I enjoyed Europe's Arctic temperatures, which were keeping the snow in great shape for skiing. But back to markets and the outlook for 2026, indeed, I used the same title as last year, the previous years, Let the Good Times Roll. Here are 12 reasons to stay a bull. Remember one of my favorite, all-time favorite movies called Forrest Gump with Tom Hanks? Forrest is that long-distance runner who crosses the United States 5 times before he finally decides he's pretty tired. And then he stops. His run had lasted 3 years, 2 months, 14 days and 16 hours. Seems to me the U.S. economy is pretty much like Forrest Gump. It's been growing since the end of the lockdowns in April 2020. So its run has lasted for 5 years, 8 months and 7 days so far. And in our roaring 20s scenario, we do expect productivity gains to keep the economy growing through the end of this decade without a recession. We also expect innovation to keep inflation at bay and its blessings to spread more broadly. And if so, then the current bull market in equity should continue. The gap benefit from the Mag 7 should really be passed on to the other impressive 493, if you will. And by the end of the decade, who knows, the S&P 500 and the Dow Jones could well rise above 10,000 for the S&P or 70,000 for the Dow. But for now, let's wait until we get there. But the next step, I think, could be another earnings quarter for the history books, which is about to start next week, as we both know. Plus, in addition to good earnings, which are lifted by productivity gains, which are spreading from the U.S. across to Europe, Japan, Asia, 2026, in our view, will also enjoy much more fiscal and monetary stimulus, something the U.S. has enjoyed quite a while, but Europe certainly hasn't, and neither has really China. And we expect lower central bank rates and bond yields, both in the U.S., but also in other leading economies. U.S. Treasurer Scott Bessent has already announced substantial government checks to Main Street, which he calls the alchemy of the golden age. But expect even more fiscal stimulus in Japan, Europe, and China, where governments feel an urge to catch up on security and infrastructure investments, which they've been postponing for far too long. And that really explains, I think, why this year again, Japan, European stock markets, as well as emerging markets, are leading the global performance derby. And of course, the other important theme should be the big shift from the Mag 7 to the remaining 493 and the rest of the economy.
Well, Burkhard, thank you for that assessment and outlook to get us started. Let me raise two questions here. For one, there remains widespread concerns about a bubble in AI and about valuations in general. How do you, Burkhard, address them in your Roaring 20s thesis?
Well, look, I think our view on that is quite simple. We all agree that the chip and semiconductor business is and will remain a highly cyclical business. And so when the tide turns, markets will ruthlessly disclose when swimming naked. But what matters more is that the benefits of the AI revolution are here to stay. It's like the genie is out of the bottle. You can't get it back in. And just as we all still benefit, to give you another example, from the benefits of those fiber cables, which were laid in the late 1990s by all those telecom companies who went bust later at the end of the TMT bubble, we're still benefiting from that. And so in our view, in the next phase, in this AI revolution will move from the infrastructure build-out, which we've seen this year and last year, to passing the baton, as I said, from the Mach 7 to the other impressive 493. Oh, and your other concern about valuations, we're not really too concerned about valuations simply for three reasons. One, this bull market so far has been driven by earnings, not valuations. Two, because valuations normally decline during a recession, which we simply don't expect. And three, I think the renaissance of European and emerging markets really still opens a world of rather inexpensive investments. And the soft dollar should continue to lift emerging markets and render today's investments there even more attractive as their currencies strengthen. And for those who still remain concerned about a tech bubble and high valuations, I would mention again some other powerful themes which stand on very different legs in our view, like the high-flying beach stocks. I talked about them before, beach being the acronym for booking, entertainment, airlines, cruises, and hotels. They're all thriving because the baby boomers are the richest pensioners in history. In the U.S., the $85 trillion nest eggs are worth almost three times U.S. GDP, and while admittedly their wardrobes or garages may already be full, they still love to travel or to spend their wealth on their health, on their fitness, beauty, or entertainment. So the drivers of this beach theme are really quite different from the tech boom, which also makes them ideal for diversification.
So, Burkhardt, if you don't mind me checking in here for a moment, while I see how the baby boomers are driving demand for services, isn't that also driving up prices, fueling an affordability debate, which could ultimately derail or even diminish some of these waves?
All right. I mean, I get that. And yes, I think that's the reality. But look, I think these affordability debates, which exist really all over the world, not only in the U.S., but equally in Asia and Europe, is really, I think, to some extent, a political debate. And while admittedly U.S. inflation is still not at the Fed's 2% target, it is broadly moving, in our view, in the right direction. And more importantly, I deeply believe that the power of better ideas, proliferating innovation, remains our best ally to make things cheaper or better or both. That's why, of course, they say high prices cure high prices. Consider just, for example, the energy transition, whose S&P Clean Energy Transition Index rose almost 50% last year. Be assured that the world's insatiable hunger for electricity will keep growing. Just think about urbanization in addition to all those data centers. And yet, we expect the cost and availability of electricity to fall, not to rise. Take, for example, Saudi Arabia, a country we discussed one or two times last year. Their advanced solar power has collapsed the price of 1 kilowatt hour of clean electrical solar power to half a cent. Half a cent is less than 1% of the average price of electricity in the world. So here's a very big country, the size of Europe, with a fast-growing economy, where electricity is almost for free, which really, I think, radically changes everything from hosting global data centers to cleaning or desalinating water to growing forests or apples in the desert. This is just one example of how disruptive innovation makes things cheaper, better, or both. And our view is in the roaring 20s, there'll be many, many more disruptive innovations, like reflector technology, which seeks to harvest solar power from space 20x7, obfuscating the need for nighttime power storage. And, you know, all of this not only gets prices lower, but also supports earnings and ultimately lifts markets and benefits society, we think.
Well, Burkhardt, it was great catching up with you again as we begin a new year. Thank you very much for those inspiring thoughts. And while we didn't quite manage to cover all of your 12 reasons to remain a bull, I'm sure that readers of your weekly Viewpoints letter will enjoy them even more. So with that, Burkhardt, for now, stay well and enjoy the rest of your day. And I, of course, look forward to continuing our dialogue here in 2026.
Well, same here. And thanks for having me, as always. Looking forward to continuing this, and have a good rest of the day for now. Bye then.
Thank you for tuning in. Be sure to visit ubs.com/studios to view the entire UBS Studios suite of podcast channels, along with our video offerings, such as UBS Trending. You can also follow us on Instagram for content highlights at UBS Trending. UBS Studios is part of the UBS Chief Investment Office within UBS Global Wealth Management. Visit ubs.com/CIO to view the latest research.
UBS Chief Investment Office's investment views are prepared and published by the Global Wealth Management Business of UBS AG or its affiliate, UBS. This material has no regard to the specific investment objectives, financial situation, or particular needs of any specific recipient and is published for informational purposes only. As a firm providing wealth management services to clients globally, UBS AG and its subsidiaries offer both investment advisory services and brokerage services. Investment advisory services and brokerage services are separate and distinct, differ in material ways, and are governed by different laws and separate arrangements. In the USA, UBS Financial Services, Inc. is a subsidiary of UBS AG and a member of FINRA SIPC. For information, please visit our website at ubs.com/working with us. For a full legal disclaimer applicable to the independent investment views produced by UBS, please visit our website at ubs.com/CIO-disclaimer.